tonight I'm going to talk about kind of an odd topic, coming to ground. And it's to explain this idea, I'm going to begin by saying we have this very unusual experience by being mammals in this world. We have very sensitive bodies, very sensitive psyches. And as mammals, we have a keen hunger for exactly what we want. And it's funny the way that the latter half of the 20th century has culture shaped itself around the mammalian psyche in a way. We live in a world where, you know, you can walk into a store or go to Amazon and buy anything you want. You can go into a grocery store and find any food that you want. It can be to the precise specifications. You know, I don't like this brand, I like that brand. You know, this sort of thing. We can curate our whole experience so that it is, as much as possible, filled with exactly what we want. And we can even distract ourselves in the way that we want to be distracted, you know, all of this. And so it's a very odd situation that we're in. And it interesting the way that it makes us look at ourselves. It's very easy in this time for people to fall in this pattern of feeling, I want to feel only those emotions that I want to feel. I don't want to feel those emotions that I don't want to feel. You know, if I can choose everything else about my experience, why shouldn't I be able to choose which emotions I feel and which emotions I don't feel? You know. Now, some people, their way of approaching this is just to live entirely in their head, cut off from all vulnerability, all emotions, and live this very rational, kind of sterile world up in their head. And then there are other people who choose the emotions that they want. Now, most people don't have a problem with things like happiness and joy. I mean, there are some people who are so committed to their own pain and so defensive about their own pain and wanting to be right in their own pain that they're defended even against happiness and joy. They're threatened by it. I actually had a grandmother like this who was, she just needed to shut down optimism or good cheer wherever she saw it. But most people like happiness. You know, most people, I would say, are reasonably comfortable with what I would call the Hallmark card emotions. You know, the sort of gentle, pastel, rational, reasonable emotions. And of course, that's not all of what emotionality is. Now, it's a very funny thing. The nature of healing, as well as the nature of all the wisdom traditions, is about going into the depth of us and facing those things that we hadn't wanted to face before. And it's a logic that really runs counter to many of the predilections of our modern society. In a way, it's sad to me because when we avoid a painful experience, avoiding a painful experience, a painful emotion, has a cost. And the cost comes out in the defense. And that defense might result in a life of suffering, a life of suffering that we have, rather than facing the truth of that emotion. And so there are all sorts of people walking around in various states of disconnected and dissatisfaction and not happy with life and not knowing why they're not happy with life because they've settled for this partial existence because they're avoiding some primal experience that's painful. And it It's funny, the overall suffering over a lifetime of avoiding the pain is far greater than just facing the pain itself. That is a truth that is well known to people who have pursued the healing paths, but there's so little healing wisdom in this culture. And it, again, it's the exact opposite. It's the, you know, I want to curate my experience and feel exactly what I feel and shut out the things I don't want to feel. So sometimes what it takes to start to feel some of the things that I don't want to feel is being humiliated. And humiliated is an odd word. It's very complicated when it's in an interpersonal dynamic, when another person humiliates me, because then there's anger and resentment and wanting to get back, and it gets tangled up in all kinds of other things. I'll put that, that's a potent interaction, I'll just put that aside for a moment and talk just about the kinds of humiliation that result from life itself. And life has hundreds of ways to humiliate us, especially as we get older. And at root, the word humiliation, it's actually related to humility, which in turn is related to humus, the ground, being brought down to ground. And so in a way, humiliation is more the perspective from the ego side, from the perspective of the side of the ego saying, I don't want this experience, the ego that's having a temper tantrum because it doesn't want to be forced into having this experience it doesn't want to have. A more positive way to say this is that it is coming to ground. It is arriving in the place where we didn't want to be. It is arriving and relaxing into the experience that we're avoiding. So coming to ground is the letting go of any artifice that holds us away from our true self. Any way that I'm living in this artificial reality rather than dropping into the truth of my body. And again, it's... you know, to the rational mind, especially the rational mind conditioned by modern culture, it's the scariest thing in the world. Why would anyone ever voluntarily want to do that? Why would you voluntarily want to face pain? But the logic of healing is very subtle. First of all, we don't realize the tension we carry in our body simply from not being in sync with ourselves, simply from not relaxing into what is here, present, in the present moment, in my body. And so there's often a tremendous relaxing, a body-wide relaxing, that comes in an experience of coming to ground. There also is kind of a taste of vitality, a taste of authenticity, you might say. Truth has a kind of flavor, and I'm not talking so much about, you know, a head truth, but a deep truth of the body. When we are in touch with that truth, when we're aligned with that truth, there's something vivifying about it. Gandhi talked about Gandhi's method. He called it Satyagraha, which is often translated as, you know, nonviolent resistance or something like that. But it literally translates as truth force. And Gandhi talked about using the leverage of truth. And he used it as a political tool. But even within the psyche, truth has its own leverage. And when I come to ground, I am, as it were, on the side of my own truth. And of course, the truly miraculous thing about all healing is that when we're able to relax into ourselves and tenderly open our hearts to the places in us that are in pain, then healing occurs. We underestimate how much, and it's something I've learned again and again in my life, how much the pain looks horrible, and it looks like a horrible dragon precisely because I'm resisting it. And by resisting it, I'm giving it all this energy. So it turns into this horrible dragon confronting me, you know? And then when I'm actually able to relax, so much of that horribleness just melts away because I'm not resisting anymore, you know? In my experience, we are built through and through of love. Every cell of our body, every fiber of our being, every last corner of our psyche, the building block of life is love. And so any painful place is ultimately yearning for connection and integration. Part of the pain, part of the grief, is the fact that it is in this like closed off block place and it's not part of our flow. And so part of coming to ground is just an attempt to reestablish that flow, reestablish or to reintegrate those places that haven't been in the flow. And I'm talking here about this, I'm talking a little glibly about this idea of facing pain or being with pain. And I want to be very clear, this is a subtle thing. One distinction I learned years ago from a therapist that I really like is the distinction between maximizers and minimizers. And a maximizer is someone who, when they're triggered or they're in pain, there's an explosion of energy. Either they're yelling or screaming or crying or there's a bunch of drama, but there's somehow a tremendous amount of energy that comes out. Like everyone in the room knows that this person has been triggered. As opposed to a minimizer, when they get triggered, they clam up. You know, they become quiet, you know. It can be very much a minimizer kind of trait of, boy, if somebody triggers me, I'm not gonna let them have the pleasure of knowing that they triggered me. I'm gonna hide it so well that no one's even gonna know that they triggered me, you know, like that kind of thing. And so both of them are different shame patterns, and one is not better than the other, but often the person who's a maximizer, their experience of emotion is that they're overwhelmed by it. And maybe at other points in their life, their emotion has just been this wild torrent river that they've been drowning in, essentially, you know? And so that's been their experience of being with emotion. And so they've done, you know, their personal growth work has been just to be able to get out of the river and get to solid land in their psyche, you know? And so they, you know, sometimes a maximizer might hear my talking about confronting your pain and think that I'm saying get back into the river where you're drowning. And that's not what it is. I think the analogy I would say is, it's one experience to be drowning in the river of emotion, swept along by the current and not having, you know, being tumbled up and down and not knowing which way is up and that sort of thing, versus standing on the banks of the river and seeing it. And standing on the banks of the river, seeing it, seeing all its power, feeling all its power, but seeing it from a place of balance. That is what is known as holding a container. Holding a container for one's emotion. And I know it's something I've said a few times. I have a dear friend. He says one of the most important questions in life is simply, how big is your container? You know, how much experience can you hold with mindfulness and compassion? And it's, you know, we're all in process on this, and it's something we have to start small. You know, first of all, can you hold a container simply for your joy? Can you hold a container for your laughter, for your silliness, you know, like start there. You know, can you hold a container for, all right, a little bit of a sad experience, experience that makes me a little bit angry, you know, and just expand it more and more until we can hold more and more powerful emotions. And meditation and mindfulness are, among other things, training grounds for growing the size of our container. Coming to ground is a kind of humility, and it is, how can I say, a lot of times the artificial ways that I'm resisting life are very tightly wound up with ego defenses. And so coming to ground necessarily is a letting go. It is a relaxing of ego defenses, more of an allowing simply of what is, regardless of the ego's preferences. And so it's very much a move of humility. And as I often like to say, humility is about being on the ground. It's about being on the same level as everyone else, you know. We have this weird story in Western civilization that humility means I make myself less than everyone else. But if I'm making myself the lowest, lower than everyone else, I'm making myself just as special as if I were placing myself above everyone else. You know, humility is about letting go of the specialness of the self. Letting oneself be an ordinary human being among ordinary human beings. So humility predisposes us for connection. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. A wide variety of quotes tonight. From Rumi, we have, "Today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground." So that's sort of the other side of there are hundreds of ways for the world to humiliate us. There's, you know, Rumi's way, there are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground, you know. And then this extraordinary work by a Chinese scholar, Ouyi Zhuxi, the Buddhist Yi Jing. It's a Buddhist commentary on the Yi Jing. And at one point he writes in this, "To say that sincerity affects the simple-minded is the same as saying sincerity is like being simple-minded. This is because when people are clever and crafty, they mostly lose the sensitive response that comes from the subconscious and are not as good in this respect as the simple-minded. Therefore, it is necessary to be sincere in a simple-minded way before one can attain sincerity in the center." There's a lot going on in that quote, but the whole idea that when we're being clever and crafty, there's a way that we're avoiding coming to ground. We're up in some artifice rather than touching the ground in ourselves. Keats said, "Negative capability, that is, when a man is capable of being in uncertainties, mysteries, doubts, without any irritable reaching after fact and reason." Kurosawaki said, "You suffer because you don't want to accept what has to be accepted." Jeanne de Salzman says, "Seeing comes from does not come from thinking. It comes from the shock at the moment when, feeling an urgency to know what is true, I suddenly realize that my thinking mind can't perceive reality. To understand what I really am at this moment, I need sincerity, humility, and an unmasked exposure to that I don't know. This would mean to refuse nothing, exclude nothing, and entry into the experience of discovering what I think, what I sense, what I wish, and all that, all at this very moment." And so this whole idea of Are we going to control our experience, or are we going to accept our experience? Rollo May says, to love means to open ourselves to the negative as well as the positive, to grief, sorrow, and disappointment, as well as to joy, fulfillment, and intense consciousness that we did not know was possible before. The Jungian psychologist Marion Woodman, an incredibly wise woman, says, body work must be approached with the same respect and attentiveness that one gives to dreams. The body has a wisdom of its own. However slowly and circuitously that wisdom manifests, once it is experienced, it is a foundation, a basis of knowing that gives confidence and total support to the ego. To reach its wisdom requires an absolute concentration, dropping the mind into the body, breathing into what is ever ready to be released, and allowing the process of expression until the negative damned energy is out, making room for the positive, genuine light to flow in. Ram Dass says, it is important to expect nothing, to take every experience, including the negative one, merely as steps on the path, and to proceed. Jack Kornfield says, grief and loss and suffering, even depression and spiritual crisis, the dark nights of the soul, only worsen when we try to ignore or deny it or avoid them. The healing journey begins when we turn toward them and learn how to work with them. When we stop fighting against our difficulties and find strength to meet our demons and difficulties head on, we find that we emerge from our difficulties stronger and humbler and more grounded than we were before we experienced them. To survive our difficulties is to become initiated into the fraternity of wisdom. Tara Brach says quite simply, presence is the essence of true refuge. That one is profoundly deep in a very simple sentence. Presence is the essence of true refuge. And she also says we can't understand the nature of reality unless we let go of controlling our experience. Very straightforward. David White says, you will be humiliated into the next season of your life. The whole understanding that humiliation is actually part of the soul's way of moving from one chapter of life to the next. And again, you know, are we going to be humiliated, or are we going to kneel and kiss the ground like Rumi, you know? Brian Stevenson says, I guess I'd always known but never fully considered that being broken is what makes us human. We all have as a reason. Sometimes we're fractured by the choices we make. Sometimes we're shattered by things we never would have chosen. But our brokenness is also the source of our common humanity, the basis for our shared search for comfort, meaning, and healing. Our shared vulnerability and imperfection nourishes and sustains our capacity for compassion. Brené Brown says, vulnerability sounds like truth and feels like courage. Truth and courage aren't always comfortable, but they're never weakness. I'm not sure how to say Scarlett's last name there, but they love you when you're beautiful, winning, shining, even sinning, but they don't see you, don't hear you, don't listen to you when you're raw, real, grungy, jagged, and obviously flawed. And that's why you never let compliments go to your head or criticisms go to your heart. People are fickle. And so, more and more every day, I'm learning to be unmoved, to become grounded and content within myself. Mark and Angel Chernoff said, when you hear only what you want to hear, you're not really listening. Listen to what you don't want to hear. That's how you grow. And especially when I listen to what I don't want to hear in myself. Dr. Prem Jagasi says, success has a knack of making one complacent, but failure can keep one rooted firmly on the ground. And it's interesting, the head gets so wrapped up in success and failure. The soul doesn't care about failure. The soul really wants to know, am I having my authentic experience? You know, if I do something and I fail, but that was me, well, then that's my authentic experience, and the soul is happy, you know. It's different if I was trying to be someone other than me and then I failed. That's a different thing. Dana Akuri says, sacred rest is not just about sleeping or taking it easy. It consists of physical, emotional, and spiritual rest. The purpose is to promote a healthier mindset, attitudes, and boundaries, relationships, productivity, and wellness as a whole person, body, mind, and spirit. And it's a fascinating question. When is it that we're actually giving ourselves sacred rest? Deborah Bavant says, what does it mean to be grounded? It means no unkind being is taking up space rent-free in your body. It also means you love deeply without the need for revenge. It means digging beneath the machine mind to understand and see the beauty in each human being. I love some of those images, you know. Do you actually have unkind beings taking up space rent-free in your body or in your psyche? You know, it's a very interesting and a beautiful question.